It'd be inappropriate if I began the lecture by not expressing my sincere appreciation, first of all, for the invitation to be back with you. This is almost like coming home to me. You've always been so kind and gracious and solicitous of my well-being, and over the years made friends with so many. It's especially good to be back in the home of Jim and Sheila. They've always been so very, very kind, and I do appreciate the friendship we share there and with you. I will apologize in advance for two things. First of all, my allergies. This is the time of the year that I come down and almost lose my voice. So I take this throat thing that numbs my tongue, so I have numb tongue. So that's gonna impact my delivery to some degree. I've had people ask me, how in the world have you stayed 28 years at one place? I'm kind of like the two preachers talking about. One said to the other, said, you know, we've dismissed our Wednesday night service. You did? Yes, we did, about 6 months ago. And I said, well, how did the members feel about it? And said, well, I'm sure when they find out, they'll be upset. So that's probably somewhat like my tenure at Huntington Park. When they find out I've been there that long, they'll probably be upset about it. Many of you have inquired about Deacon, my donkey. I no longer own Deacon, nor Darwin and I own him together. We bought him together and had to sell him, sold him for a dollar. Became too vicious, mean, and bitter. But I've had more fun going to meetings and lectures, you know, and you always meet some obnoxious member of the church. They got to tell you this and tell you that and lay this load on you and that load on you. So I just tug him around and said, you know, I used to know a deacon just like you. And they go off satisfied and I go off smiling because they have no idea what I'm talking about. I also want to apologize to you in advance for my lack of knowledge that I wish I had of the Old Testament. It's not that I haven't been a student of the Old Testament. I have, as many of you are. But my knowledge goes primarily to the New Covenant. So I'm not as basic in my skills of understanding the Old Law, but I do have basically the knowledge that almost hopefully every member of the Lord's Church has. In our community of Shreveport, I don't know if you have this here or not, but a number of signs have appeared in yards around, at least in my neighborhood, keep the Ten Commandments. Keep the Ten Commandments. And members of the Lord's Church have come under the criticism that we don't believe in the Old Testament. We don't believe in doing those things that the Old Testament outlined. And invariably, they go back to the Ten Commandments, as if that was all there was to the Old Law. Now, obviously, if as a society we kept the Ten Commandments, we would be a better society. I don't think anyone's going to deny that. But to have the delusion that if I keep the Ten Commandments, I am somehow therefore pleasing to God, and that advantages my redemption in Christ, is a false notion. And it has to do with the structure and the culture into which the law was given. More than that, it has to do with the culture that obtaining and maintaining the concepts of the old law produced. Judaism was a product of the Mosaical law. And sometimes individuals forget, and this is one of those subjects that Brother Simmons alluded to, a whole lecture could go around any one of these, and so time constraints will not permit a full development of this. I'm assuming that the topic, the culture and society of the Old Testament, is centering around the law of Moses and the giving of the law of Moses. In my mind, that perception established Jewish culture. If you understand the Levitical law, the law of Moses, you have some insight into the Jewish culture. Now, we can't begin to imagine any more than we can our own frontier forefathers coming into this country, or your forefathers coming into this. My forefathers met your forefathers, and you robbed my forefathers, but we won't get into that. But you and I can't understand that culture. We can't understand what it means to get in with a team of horses and a wagon and a day's journey be 18 hard miles. We can't understand that. We can't basically understand what it means to go into a field behind a mule and a plow and work all day in the hot sun and your family depending on the success or failure of that crop you're planting. I mean, literally life or death. That's a hard, we're so far removed from that. When you can get on a plane and fly from Shreveport to Corpus Christi in 40 hours. That's an amazing thing to perceive. And when people have all those little cell phone devices, which I do not carry, and I don't apologize for not carrying mine. If I wanted to talk to members of the Lord's church, I'd do it without that. So I don't carry that thing with me. But that's an amazing technology that you can just, with flipping that open and dialing a number, you can talk literally to almost anyone in the world. I don't know why you'd want to. But you can. Has to be a lot of nonsense going on those cells. But that has nothing to do with this. How do you deal in just a few minutes with the culture of a whole nation? Well, do you look at the rulers of that nation? Do you look at the common folks? You look at their armies, their geography. Well, all of that impacts a culture. But for the Jews, all of these things that did impact their culture was dependent upon one primary designation, and that was the law. But now we need to understand that law. That law governed every aspect of Jewish society. Every aspect was touched by that law. How you treated animals, how you treated your neighbors, how you treated the poor. How you worship God. It was both a spiritual imperative and a civil law. God governed His people through that law. It impacted the rules and rituals of the marriage relationship. It impacted the sexual relationship. What kind of sexual relationship was right? What kind of sexual relationship was wrong? All of that was revealed in what we generalize as the law of Moses. So when we look at the law and we idealize the laws, perhaps we should, and we see the impact of the law, we understand coming through. We're not merely dealing with the Ten Commandments. There's more to the law of Moses. This is just when you go to Exodus 20 and you begin with the Ten Commandments. You shall have no other God before me. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. These Ten Commandments applicable under the Jewish system, but no application under the law of Christ. And we'll try to explain that at the conclusion of our lesson. It was a law for a particular people for a particular period of time, and God did not mandate its permanence. Wasn't intended to be permanent. And the amazing thing, individuals who want to keep the law either are naive in their comprehension or deceitful in their application. I remember having a conversation with a man of a denomination group. He was the first Christian preacher. And we were talking about the introduction of instrumental music into the worship. And he went back to the Old Testament, and I said, well, you realize we don't live under the Mosaical law. And he said, oh, you're one of those kind. And I said, well, what do you mean one of those kind? He said, well, you don't believe in the law of Moses. I said, no, sir, and you don't either. Well, what do you mean, young man? I was a young man then. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, where do you preach? And he gave me the name of the denomination or location of it. I said, I'm going to come Sunday and I'm going to bring a little lamb. And he looked at me as if I were nuts. And I said, I'm going to bring it up front and I expect you to take it and split its throat and let the blood flow down on your communion table. Oh, we wouldn't do any such thing. I said, you don't believe in keeping the law then. Because part of the law was the ritual of sacrifice as an atonement for sin. And you don't do that. I have a mediator superior to the law. It's the Son of the living God. And individuals who want to live under the Mosaic law, the Ten Commandments specifically, denying the fullness of the concept of the law in its totality, its sacrifices, its feast day. How often did the Apostle Paul, in almost every book that he wrote, denounce the Jewish system of circumcision and feast days? Read 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus. Don't involve yourselves in old wives' tales and fables. The fables he's talking about are the fables that centered around the Jewish religion. Don't get involved in that kind of haranguing and harassing one another. Don't do that. Go to the simplicity that is in Jesus Christ. The culture of the Old Testament was primarily rural. There were no large cities. This is from the standpoint of the history of the concept. The family was the primary support net. If you were a wife and your husband died, you were at the mercy of your physical family. And if your physical family were not so disposed, or there was no physical family to support you, you were in dire circumstances. You could literally starve to death. There was no government agency that you could go to there unless you supposed yourself to go before the king or some other magistrate and beg for assistance, which you may or may not receive. You remember the story that Jesus told about the woman who went before the magistrate and continued to ask, and finally, out of weariness, the magistrate said, "What? This woman is going to worry me to death." We've all been there, haven't we? I'm just kidding. "This woman is going to worry me to death, so I'm going to give her what she wants, and then she will leave me alone." Other than that, you had only one other occupation open to you, and that was prostitution, which of itself was prohibited by the law. Do you see how the law controlled every aspect of the human condition? It was both a moral law, a spiritual law. It told you how to worship, where to worship, what was acceptable worship. Oh, and by the way, the new covenant does too. And it's sad that many in the church haven't been made aware of that simple fact. God arbitrates where, what, and when constitutes worship. The law has changed, the disposition has changed, but God has not changed. He still dictates what is acceptable to Him. In the arena of morals, in the relationship of marriage, in our parenting, all of these things relate to the Jewish society at that particular time. If you didn't have a family, as we are, and we will not belabor this, you were simply in very, very dire circumstances. The culture under the law was God-directed. It was directed by God. I want to make reference to a few passages, one in Isaiah 45, beginning with verse 5. "I am the Lord, there is no other. There is no God beside me. I will girt you and through you, and though you have not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun to its setting that there is none beside me. I am the Lord and there is no other. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create calamity. I, the Lord, do all of these things." Under the law of Moses, God was directing and guiding His people toward what God wanted the law to accomplish. Not a permanence, but a specific goal. Through that, through those people, was going to come a mediator, a propitiation, 1 John, superior to anything that the law of Moses could accomplish. Through that was the Son of God going to come into this world. Matthew puts it in these ways. In the fullness of time. What's that mean? When God was ready. When God knew that things were prepared, and that this was the time for His Son to come into the world, and it was time for the old law. In Matthew 5, I believe Jesus says, "Do not think I've come to destroy the law or the prophets." And some people hinge on that passage, misinterpret it, and say, "Oh, this was to be permanent." That's not what Jesus is saying. Finish the verse. "I came to fulfill." What's that mean? Complete. I am the completion, Jesus said, of the law. I am its finality. And it's going to be pressed or put out of the way. Again, in Isaiah 1 and 18 and verse 20, this is another, simply another emphasis of God's infinite wisdom and of His glory and of His love. In Isaiah, we'll take a moment to turn there. Again, in Isaiah, this is in chapter 5, beginning with verse 20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. That'd almost go in the headlines of our papers, wouldn't it? Who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. I guess we ought to read verse 22. Woe to men mighty at drinking wine. You know, we've got more and more men of the Lord's church defending that drinking. Drunkenness and the idiocy that accomplishes. I will not ever forget, and it's just been imprinted on my mind, of what the humorist at one time said, Bill Cosby. He said, I cannot understand why going out all night getting drunk and hugging a toilet at 2 o'clock in the morning is supposed to be fun. And yet we have members of the church defending that very, very thing today. The emphasis that I'm placing here is the fact that God's concept of law is often perverted by men. The Pharisees did this. Even the priests did this. And Jesus' greatest chastisement of any group of people was His chastisement to the Pharisees and the priests for their tinkering with the law to satisfy their own desires and to maintain their power and position over the people. They had so perverted the law that when Jesus came on the scene, it was almost unrecognizable as the law that had been given. They had surrounded it with tradition and personal deceit and the desire for gain. There's a lesson there for the church, too, if we're willing to listen to what happened. You know, the nation of Israel is a presentation of the church that was to come. A people governed by God. A culture governed by the will of God. A church founded on the blood of the Son of God. Now, all of this relates one culture flowing into another. We are the body of Jesus Christ, governed by the will of God under a new covenant, a new law, a different law. And as the law of Moses established and dictated that culture, the will of God under the new covenant will establish and dictate to us as a culture. And the Apostle Paul had trouble with that. Not trouble personally with that, but trouble conveying that message to individuals and bringing together the Jew and the Gentile. And we have some individuals in the church who lack that perception. Now, this is a departure from the text, but I'm going to utilize it anyway. I believe there will be more people from the church in hell over racial bias and bigotry than for any other reason. Amen. I believe that with all my heart. I have brothers and sisters in Christ all over the world. We are made one in the gospel of Jesus Christ. You ought to read Romans and you ought to read it anyway. But you ought to read the concluding chapter where Paul names these co-workers, these fellow servants, these sons in the faith that he names. And I didn't realize this until I read it more carefully. In that litany, that list that Paul gives, there are Greeks, there are Romans, there are soldiers, there are Jews, there are former prostitutes. Made one under the new law. The law of Moses could not accomplish that. It wasn't intended to accomplish that. It wasn't intended to bring the world in unity. It was intended to bring Jesus into the world. And we need to understand that significant difference. Now, we're not going to take the time. See, this is the beautiful thing about, and the horrible thing about preaching now, teaching now. You're hungry. But you can't go till I'm done. So you're sitting there saying, get done. So I'm not going to read Hebrews 8, 9, and 10. But I want you to read it. Because it is one of the most significant parts of an understanding of the transition from the old law, the old covenant, to the new. And once you can grasp that, you can understand the difference in the Jewish culture, a rural, God-subservient, family-oriented culture. But you know, that basic concept is carried over in the New Covenant, isn't it? We're to care and love for our families. Go to Ephesians chapter 5 and 6. Are we not? That's part of the New Covenant. But Jesus makes it clear it is not possible through the Hebrew writer's pen. It is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could do what? Take away sin. Couldn't do it. You really want to go back and live under the old law? No, you don't. If you do, you're ignorant of what the old law teaches. You have no inkling of what's involved in the old law. Well, it's keep the Ten Commandments. Yes, it is. It's also not to go more than a Sabbath day's journey. That's part of it. It's the offering of animal sacrifices. That's part of it. It has to do with particular dress. That's part of it. All of this tied up into the old covenant, which established Jewish culture. Now, when you get to the Old Testament, and this is an aside, you are visualizing the decay of Jewish culture. Because the old law is no longer being bound on the hearts and minds of people. And something new, and I believe this is in God's order and God's good time. We've just read where God, as God, determines His laws and His covenants in Isaiah. So He determines this new covenant coming in on the grave, if I can use that comparison, of the old. The old is dying and ready to pass away, the Hebrew writer says. But that which is coming in its place is superior to and greater than. It's always amazed me that individuals want to run back to the old law to defend what they cannot defend under the new covenant. And there's a reason why they do that. Because they do not want to submit to the new covenant. They don't want to submit to that. It is a covenant that James tells us in James 1 is the perfect law of liberty. Perfect. Needing nothing. It's that same law that Paul writes about in 2 Timothy chapter 3 that is able to bring a man unto what? Perfection. The law of Moses could not do that. The law of Moses was not intended to do that. I cannot begin to give you any relationship as to the culture and society in which our Savior was born and in which David worked and operated as king. It would almost be beyond our ability to grasp. It is so foreign to us. It is so alien to how you and I live. There is really no comparison to make at all as far as our society and our culture and theirs. You say, well, you go and read Josephus. I'm sorry. It's a waste of your time. Josephus writes about kings. You ever notice that most of the histories are written about kings? And rulers. I'm kind of a history buff of and always have been, but especially of World War II. You ever read anything about World War II? Have you ever noticed that most of the writing is about the generals? Don't read much about the common soldier unless you go talk to one of the common soldiers who did most of the... General Patton. Now, there is a buffoon. Now, you may not agree, but that's my historical analysis of it. Oh, blood and guts. It was always someone else's blood and guts, by the way. Wasn't ever his. I can't even relate to the generation of my father who was in that. I am so far removed from that. So when we go to the Old Testament and we see the aspects of this culture, the civil law and the code, that did you realize that a rebellious child was to be stoned to death under the civil law of Moses? That an adulterous woman was to be taken. You remember the occasion when they brought the adulterous woman to Jesus and asked Jesus, of course it was deceitful, asked Jesus, what should we do? The law says she ought to be stoned. And the law said that. I'm kind of like Brother Marshall Keeble was on the death of Ananias and Sapphira when he was asking one of his revivals, why? Why didn't God do that today? Why didn't God strike people today down for covetousness and lying? Brother Keeble said, well, God wouldn't do that. It'd wipe out half the church. Well, I don't know how true. I don't know. I hope that wouldn't be true at all, but it may be. It was, according to James 1:25, a perfect law. I would make this comparison in preparing for our conclusion. There were harsh penalties under neglecting the old law. We've alluded to some of those, for adultery, for rebellious children, so forth and so on. There were some laws we simply have no means of comprehending, of understanding, the care of animals and of one's beast, leaving the corners of one's field unharvested. We understand the purpose of that, but I don't think we understand the real significance of that. There was no Social Security that you applied for at 65. And I want to know something. How do all these insurance agencies know I'm turning 65? I want to know that. I get about 10 letters every day. Congratulations, Mr. Johnson. You've reached a hallmark. I know what they mean. You ain't dead yet. I know exactly what they mean. My dear wife and I solicit your prayers on our behalf. We're both having or have had some significant health problems, and your prayers would be appreciated. But we were driving down the road toward church, and I said, you know, honey, time really flies. She says, it does. How in the world have we lived this long? And being the intelligent man I turned to her, and I said, we haven't died yet. My wife has no really fine developed sense of humor at all. I'll let you know that. But I want to pose this question to you. We understand the harsh penalties for neglecting the old law. Are we neglecting the new covenant in the body of Jesus Christ today? When you even have to raise the question about the recertification of elders, aren't we neglecting the law? When you even have to deal with that question, I know we have to deal with it in an honest, straightforward way. But isn't that a result of neglecting the teachings of the new covenant? I think it is. When you have members of the Lord's church coming and asking again about the relevance of the non-use of instrumental music in the worship to God, aren't we neglecting the new covenant? I think we are. I know we are. As there were penalties under the old law, there are harsher penalties under the new. No, you won't be stoned to death. You'll be lost eternally. You will hear Jesus say, Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. I am tired of members of the Lord's church who do not understand the seriousness of the law under which they live and treat it as if it were some kind of game. I don't wish this on anybody, but it was an eye-opening experience for me. It might behoove every member of the Lord's church to wake up in intensive care. I guarantee you, your outlook will change. And you'll see things in an entirely different light than you've ever seen them. You won't just be talking Christianity. You'll be praying to God that you've been living it. I went in for surgery. The doctor said, and doctors lie. You know that as well as I do. And if you're a doctor, don't come to me and tell me you don't. Doctor said, well, you'll go in Friday morning and go home Saturday. I woke up in intensive care and stayed there for 5 or 6 days. And somewhere I'd heard, if you got 7 little things sticking in you, you're going to die. So I counted and only had 6. I got to tell you this story, and then we're going to conclude. And what's this have to do with the lesson? Well, I can make it apply. I can do that with almost anything. About the third night in intensive care, I couldn't breathe. I mean, I was gasping for breath. I was scared to death. Called in the little nurse. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. She said, well, I'll call the doctor. He came in about 10 minutes. He said, Mr. Johnson, I'm having trouble communicating with the doctor. I said, I don't care. I can't breathe. You got to do something. So he came back in about 5 minutes. He says, you're not going to believe this. He said, what? Doctor told me to give you a laxative. I said, I can't breathe. He said, well, I've got to do what the doctor. Of course, I didn't have enough sense to refuse it. I mean, everyone knows doctor knows more than we do. That's hogwash. But I'll guarantee you, you forget about your breathing problem pretty quick. There is a law. Jesus is the propitiation, perfect sacrifice for that law. I do not know how you stand with your relationship with God. I have not fully developed the culture of the Jews. I could not. But I can tell you about the Christian culture and the law under which we now live. And I promise you, dear friends, on that day, beyond intensive care and beyond a doctor's care, the only thing you're going to want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant.